The Mincing Rascals drop a day early this week. Hi, it's John Williams. We're putting it out Wednesday so we can all go to Washington, D.C. on Thursday for the big holiday hoo-ha. Truth is, we didn't go to Washington, D.C. for the big 4th of July hoo-ha, and the gang should not get their undies in the knot they did over this, but not our undies we did. And then we went from Trump land to what happened to Joe Biden at that debate. And what happened to our beloved bean in Chicago? It was vandalized. We also talked up how elections get cooked up in Cook County, too. The Mincing Rascals won this year's Illinois Broadcasters Association Best Podcast Award. But we want to make it better. So please email me, John Williams, at WGNradio.com with your comments or if you'd like to advertise in this space as we launch in 2-1. Today is Thursday.
It's not, John. Start again. It's Wednesday.
Today is Wednesday. It's July 3rd, 2019. And look at us. It's 11:09 in the morning.
Woo.
Gives us more time to chat. I'm John Williams, and this is the Mincing Rascals, the award-winning weekly podcast. We record at the studios at WGN Radio here in Chicago. I'm on the air at that place from 1 to 3.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch on WGN Radio, and I really wish the rest of you would dress more professionally.
I'm Scott Standis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, creator of the comic strip Prickly City, and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I'm Justin Kaufman, host of Extension 720.
I'm Eric Zorn, the professionally attired columnist from the Chicago Tribune.
But you guys are dressed like it's the 4th of July now. It's not, okay? We got a day to go. Justin, you look adorable.
Here, but, yeah. Thank you, buddy.
You have a barbecue shirt on that looks like it would be good at a pool.
This is a Nordstrom Rack special, so I don't want
nice.
To brag, guys, but this is kind of top.
That's because you make that sweet WGN money.
That's right.
You've got
money.
A Chicago Tribune T-shirt on. Do they give those out over there? How do you get one?
They
of those?
Give them, and they can take it away.
My advice, gentlemen, speaking of the 4th of July, for people that are offended by President Trump's version of the 4th of July is don't watch it. You don't have to. By all accounts, it won't be endless rows of tanks and missiles and thousands of polished troops saluting their fearless leader. The big cost that the media is mentioning is $2.5 million diverted from the U.S. Park Service. That's not a lot. If it's any consolation, along with a couple of M1 tanks and armored personnel carriers, you might also be able to see...
I thought they were Sherman tanks, but go ahead.
Yeah, it was supposed to be.
New Sherman.
No, I don't think we've had Sherman tanks in decades, have we?
The president said he was going to have... They're going to be new Sherman tanks.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Well, there's also going to be the Trump baby out on the Great Lawn.
Nice.
But they're not allowing
helium.
So what does this mean?
Well, you can bounce it around like a concert beach ball, but the giant floating Trump baby, the Park Service said you can't put helium, so they can't float it, but it is going to be there. They do have a permit for that. Thomas Jefferson watched a military parade go by in 1801. Most modern presidents have not, but this isn't a modern president.
It has nothing. I agree with you. It has nothing to do with the cost. We spend so much money on so many things, although think of the toothbrushes and soap you could buy with that money.
Yeah, I know where you're going with that.
But no, but I mean it. To express dismay over this by cost, I think, is missing the point. And we'll see what he does. But I kind of like in the 4th of July, you know, the picnic's over, you have nothing to do, you turn on Channel 11, and you want to watch the concert, and you listen to music you'll never hear again for the rest of the year. I like that. I'm not going to watch it this year.
This year comes.
You're not a Sousa fan, is what you're saying?
I am a Sousa fan, but I found out once a year is good. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, I saw them putting all the stuff up around in front of the Lincoln Memorial and all that stuff. Is he going to speak?
Yeah, yes, that's the whole point. That's the whole point.
That's the part
he's
that rubs
speak.
Me.
He's going to speak, and the RNC is giving away VIP tickets to it.
What would a dictator do? That's what you have to ask yourself. And this is exactly what a dictator would do. A guy who wants to be a dictator. He lusts after that sort of power, that sort of display. I know it's not a lot of money. I agree with that.
How is this different than the Air and Water Show?
It's not a vehicle. It's totally different from the Air and Water Show because this is about Donald Trump. He's making it about himself.
And this is a traditional national celebration about the 4th of July.
That the president usually doesn't politicize.
Political, right. It's where you see, again, the John Philip Sousa music and the Broadway stars, they'll never see again until the Tonys are on.
It's the speech part, because I feel like the media is kind of really rustling this up. You know, I can't believe this is happening, these tanks, this, that, and the other. I think at the end of the day, you'll get a kind of supersized parade out of it with a couple of prop military. It won't be the kind of thing that we think it's going to be. Everyone keeps mentioning whether it be Russia or China or
North Korea.
Or North Korea. It's not going to be like that. The problem I have is I just don't understand why the president needs to speak. And that's the part that kind of throws me. And if you were going to just put on a great super parade, the last thing you would want to hear is the person who put the parade on to give a speech at the end, okay, right? That's not how parades work.
People are going to listen to this after the president speaks, and we may eat those words. If Barack Obama, for instance, or Ronald Reagan had given a soaring, patriotic, feel-good speech, we would not have felt that out of place.
Okay, now wait a minute. Soaring and inspirational?
And feel-good.
Who are we talking about?
And so what if somebody writes a speech for him that isn't a rally? Then won't you feel bad having prejudged this speech?
No.
I still feel like the entire optics of this are terrible, and it's sickening to me what this guy is doing to make it about himself and to take this country in a direction that it shouldn't be going.
He puts down our allies, and now he's trying to do a little Bastille Day celebration.
If we could have this conversation without the current president being in the mix, I wonder what it would be like.
We wouldn't be having it, and I'll tell you why. Because a normal presidency doesn't usurp precedent. This has been it's been non-politicized for two centuries for a reason. We've had military parades before. It was always after military victories. We had one after World War II. We had one after the Civil War.
Definitely
so it's
did.
Not unusual to have military parades in celebration of military successes. But that's not what this is, and it's not what it smells like going into it.
Can I ask just I asked this question as well on air, just about is there a fervor for this, or is there a are they clamoring? Are followers like, you know, we're just not patriotic enough? I wish we had a president who'd come in there and show how strong we are as a military. I mean, is he playing to a base in this way that people are excited for
his
military
base?
That's what I'm saying. Like, does his base love the idea of jets going over?
They
and
love
tanks
the idea of patriots.
I think this is about he wanted a military parade, and he couldn't get it, and so this is the next
and all his good friends,
thing or closest
Kim Jong Il, Kim Jong Un, and Putin, and they all have that kind of power at their fingertips. Does this play in at all to this story about Colin Kaepernick and the Nike shoe with the flag on the back?
Mm. How stupid is that?
Well, of Nike, I'm sorry
to back off. You mean?
Yeah, you know, I generally think Colin Kaepernick's got some good points to make. This one just seems like one of those things that goes.
Describe the shoe.
Way too far. The shoe is
red, white, and blue.
Red, white, and blue, and on the back is the original design of the field.
The Betsy Ross,
the 13 stars.
Yeah, in a circle on the back of the shoe.
The Betsy Ross flag. And Kaepernick and some other critics, I guess Kaepernick being the main one, says this is from a time in our country's history where there was slavery, and so this is a symbol of slavery, which, by that token, every dollar bill you have is a symbol of slavery, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a slippery slope. Right?
Everything before 1865 is a symbol of slavery.
It's not a Confederate flag.
It's not a Confederate flag, and I thought that I just, you know, like I say, I'm pretty sympathetic to Colin Kaepernick and what he's about. This just struck me as a kind of a nutty contention, and then for Nike to fold.
How about that?
Well, the thing I want to hear more about, because then after that complaint, there's the "and also." And the "and also" is that that flag has now been co-opted by racist groups.
Oh, so it's like the symbol.
Yeah, it is. And that's what these stories are saying. That's not getting nearly as much attention as
so that's why Kaepernick and company are pushing back, not necessarily about the roots of where that flag comes from, but how it's being used
and
now.
And if that's true, then
changes
then
the
story's different. But it changes it in a couple of ways. It's a little more understandable why there would be a caution in using it, but also, we have to stop letting these people co-opt our symbols. And that's a real problem. If we're going to stop using this flag because hate groups are using it, you know, that this is a big part of Americana, and we've got to figure out a way to make that stop happening. I mean, maybe we should all be wearing that flag.
Well, in fact, of all people to stand up for this was Alan Stern and the New Horizons mission, their flyby of the latest Kuiper Belt object, and they named it Ultima Thule, which apparently, unbeknownst to anybody, some far-right white supremacist group had usurped that phrase a few years prior to that. And so Alan, who is clearly, Jewish, American, and said that, we're not going to let these guys usurp the name. It's a great name. This is the name of this thing.
Yeah, and that's what we've got to figure out a way to do, to not add them or give them fodder but to not let them take this.
Well,
stuff
nobody's
as well.
Publicizing their cause more than the people that are trying to shut them down.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be delightful for them if they were able to buy these shoes and wear them around? I mean, if it is how they use.
Well,
that
I'm on
symbol.
Your side. I think if you wouldn't have even brought it up, Colin, I wouldn't have known that the flag is being co-opted by the hate groups.
You can't,
I don't hear
I'm not
the
sure
hate groups that
true.
Much.
But Bertrand is right. You can't. If you just say, okay, well, you want that symbol, you can have that symbol. What symbol are they going to want to have next?
Right.
And at some point, you got to say,
how do you do that? Do we all wear the Betsy Ross flag? Do we dilute their message by all of us wearing it? Or
it's a good question. I wasn't even aware that they were using it.
I'm not convinced that's true.
That's my point.
Bertrand's a good newsman, and I just follow whatever he says.
I have questions about it, too. I do have questions about it, too. But when you read the stories, they bring up the slave era first, but then they also say, and it's also used by. It seems to me that the second part is more legitimate if it's true. I mean, they're reporting
that it's
true. Yeah,
but if you go to these sites, and sometimes these guys get on my case, and I go look at them, and they grab the current 50-star flag as well. They just paste anything they can there.
You know, the way to get a record popular used to be ban it in Boston, and then everybody will want to listen to the lyrics, and then the song becomes a hit. It works against your cause. I think Colin Kaepernick's fallen into that trap here. I didn't know any of this stuff. I wouldn't have been talking about this stuff. The sneaker looks really cool. I haven't bought an expensive sneaker since ever.
Sneakers are stupid.
Since my kids last got one from me.
There's a company out of Detroit called SpaceX, and they sell... Is it SpaceX, I think?
No, SpaceX is
no,
the
that's right. StrideX. It's something X. StrideX
was the acne pad.
So it's not StrideX. We know it's not SpaceX.
StockX.
Are you thinking of X-rated movies?
It's StockX.
Stop the recording.
Keep going.
It's StockX.
Okay, sorry. StockX.
And StockX sells sneakers, high-end, sometimes used sneakers. And they've already gotten a pair of these, apparently, or some of these, and they're being sold for
how much?
A couple $1,000s.
Well, imagine they have an inventory of them. They said they're not going to sell them. Those shoes are somewhere. They're going to put them through a grinder.
If you're following the logic that Steve put out, that let's say that this is less about what it stood for back in the 18th century and more about what it stands for now with some hate groups.
Or how it's
being used. You could understand why Nike, who has doubled down on Colin Kaepernick, made him the star, put him in the you would not want to be in a position where he's speaking out against your brand in a way that says that you've associated yourself with a hate group, especially since the customers that are buying Nike shoes are people that are empathetic or sympathetic with Colin Kaepernick.
Maybe they should have run it by him because he's been a spokesperson for them.
That sounds like what they did late, right? Like, it's just
I
like,
guess.
But anyway, we got these shoes here. So, yeah, that kind of thing.
But it's like, who knew about it? I mean, I think John's point is like, it's the kind of thing where if it were like some sort of a strange symbol, you might want to run it by some people to make sure. But it's the flag.
Betsy Ross flag.
Who would have even thought about that? So.
I don't like the Trump 4th of July plan, but I'll probably watch it. I saw his vision of the new paint job for Air Force One.
Is that real?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he going to do it?
Well, it's not the Screaming Eagle one. It is. It's the same color scheme as the Trump plane. That is, the Trump plane is a layer of white, a red stripe in the middle, and then blue. This will be the opposite. Blue on the bottom, a layer of red stripe, and then white on the top. Oh, no. And it looks a little brighter. I mean, the sort of pastel blue that is Air Force One now does look kind of 60s Kennedy. And if we were going to update it, this is not so bad.
Right.
I have no problem with this.
Update it to an 80s look. That's so Trump, right?
Similarly, I'm going down a path here.
Go back to the plane, though.
Okay.
So does it mimic his own personal plane?
Yes.
Okay, well, I have a problem with that.
It's red, white, and blue. And Ivanka's picture isn't on there. If you did not know what Trump's plane looked like, you would see this as an appropriate coloration of our Air Force One.
But we do. Because he used to have an airline, and that Trump plane became the campaign status for him to go.
I'm not going to talk to you guys about this. Right. I want to talk about Kim Jong-un's handshake on North Korean soil.
I'm not talking about that.
How do I look in this dress? I don't want to hear it,
Eric. How do you feel about the president shaking Kim Jong-un's hand in North Korea?
I dislike the entire way that he comports himself with the worst people in the world. I think that is just disgusting, the way he cozies up to Putin, the way he cozies up to Kim Jong-un, the way he cozies up to the leaders in Saudi Arabia. I just think it's awful. And I don't know what he stands for, but it's not our values when he's doing that.
I didn't ask you that. I asked you, how do you feel about his
John's not listening. John's not listening. He's not listening to his own podcast.
Oh, wait. My headphones are different than yours. Right. No, but I mean, I don't like any of that either, Eric. But it, to me, isn't it? Scott, let me ask you.
Okay.
Getting very McLaughlin up in here.
No, wrong. Aren't there two ways to imagine? You guys are good. Aren't there two ways to imagine this? Either missiles or handshakes? Even Dick Durbin told our Steve Cochran this week that, well, it's a photo op and it's empty.
Bottom line, I'm glad they're talking. It's better than shooting at one another. In reality, nothing's happened here. It was a photo opportunity.
Better handshakes than missiles.
Yeah, and, so, and the first president to step foot in North Korea. I think anytime you talk, you sit down and talk, it's better than pointing guns and missiles at each other, and regardless of who the president is. So, you know, I'm sure the right would have gone nuts if Obama had done any of this.
Can you imagine? Well, I mean, Fox famously excoriated Barack Obama for even intimating that he would talk to some of these world leaders. Eric, you pointed that out, and here's the Fox clip.
Obama would personally negotiate with leaders of terrorist nations like Iran and North Korea without preconditions. Wow.
Look, it's a bad idea for the president to speak to Kim Jong-un.
The current president truly believes that he's the chosen one.
I'm all for them talking. And I'm all for them forging, even if it's a twisted, perverted relationship with each other that they have, if they're love letters or whatever they are. But he stepped foot in North Korea, where the leader starves his people, where the leader assassinates his relatives, where the leader assassinates his nuclear negotiators who had just met with the president. He stood there.
Where they killed an American.
He stood there, and he said it was an honor to do it.
Otto Warmbier.
Oh, yeah, right. I don't have a problem with any of the optics of it, but I think Steve hit it right on the head. You're dealing with it. The reason that we have been trained as Americans to understand why to not like North Korea is because of their human rights record. The fact that they are a dictatorship and his family treats his people that way, and we're talking about, and then wants to play with nuclear weapons that could change the course of our planet. It's not a guy that you go do photo ops with and give him that kind of credibility or that kind of handshake. There was a guest on with Roe this week that made a good point. The only time you ever do that is when you get concessions first. You press for guys like Kim Jong-un, you get the concession, then you go shake the hand. That's the reward for it. Right. So with no concession here, it seems like it's...
Well, that's the problem.
It's a leader of the free world. It's a leader of the superpower.
He gave it away.
If you want to shake hands, you got to pay for that.
In the olden days, say the fall of 2016... I didn't think that the immigration issue was a crisis, but we've sure made it one. The bodies of a father and daughter floating in the Rio Grande and the pictures and videos of migrants crammed into cages in Texas present a searing issue now that this is a political football doesn't help. The Obama administration did not fix this issue, and those cages were built when Barack was president, but he's not the president now. It's Donald Trump's problem to fix. Agreed?
Yeah, the pictures, was it Joaquin Castro, congressman who, and I just saw some of them today for the first time, are just jarring, these people standing like cattle in a pen.
I don't know that this helps, but, you know, they're not being kept there for months.
There was a person there for 40 days.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's over a month.
I guess so.
Okay, here's my question about this, John.
It's terrible. Your Honor, I have that stricken from the record.
And I'm not, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm not sure. The people who are being held
are legal asylum seekers.
Are here legally.
Yes.
They legally, these aren't people who sneaked across the border.
No.
These aren't criminals that way.
They came
legally
asking for
presented
asylum,
themselves
right.
To the border.
And the points of entry to which they would normally present themselves are closed. So another way to do it is to cross, quote unquote, illegally, but present yourself to an agent. And that is a legal way to seek asylum.
The problem I have all the way across, I mean, the obviously all of the conditions, terrible, deplorable, everything in there, it looks terrible for the United States of America, a country that shouldn't be doing this thing, but we've done it for years. So it's not just Trump. But the reason why, and there's been stats that have put out this week of who is coming through the southern border, and I think there's this idea, this marketing idea that they're going to market it as Mexicans and bad hombres and all this kind of stuff, but it's not. It's Venezuelans. It's Guatemalans. It's Central America.
Yeah.
It's all people leaving because their country is in shambles, meaning their economics are going to...
The murder rate.
I had somebody on once who's here legally for asylum, was in Chicago. She came in and talked about how her husband was killed. He was a shop owner who wouldn't give over any money. They killed him right in the street. She left with her daughter to come to America because they had no other choice because they were being threatened to be killed as well. Point is, if that was happening here, if we were in a position where we felt that was you of course would take your loved ones and try to get somewhere to safety. So I don't understand why these people are completely. I guess it's all race and everything that goes into it because they're being vilified in this way that they're
the
criminals. The people seeking asylum. And I'm like, they're doing exactly what you would do if you were in that position.
Yeah, I get the letters I got last week. I wrote about that picture about the little girl drowned holding onto her dad's neck. And people were writing like, he's a criminal and he killed
what?
Her by doing. Yeah, and people were like,
He
put her in harm's way. You know, I have no sympathy for him at all. And so really, you have no sympathy for someone like that? I think this is a very difficult question. The entire immigration issue is very difficult. I don't know what the limiting principle is that people have about that. Like, do you want to just say everybody can come who wants to come? I don't think we're saying that. Are we saying no one can come? I don't think we're saying that. What the conditions are that people can legally have a right to be here? What's the path to citizenship? All these questions are really difficult, I think. I mean, I don't have like simple answers to them at all. But at some basic level, there's the humanity of these people and that they are like us. And I think that Justin's point is exactly right, which is you need to put yourself in the position of a young father and say like, and who's living in these desperate situations and who just wants a better, safe life for his family. And wouldn't you do that as well?
Europeans did that throughout the whole 20th century. I mean, think about Ellis Island and everything that happened. And I think of my wife's family and probably people's families in here coming over, whether it be Mussolini or whether it be, we don't like the tide of what's about to happen in World War II coming on here.
The potato famine in
my
Ireland.
My point is that that has been a part of the condition of the United States of America for centuries. So it blows my mind that now we're like, no, not that border.
And see,
we'll do up Ellis Island, we'll do that, but not that border down. No, you're coming for criminal reasons.
And that brings me back to the 4th of July celebration. Instead of doing it with the backdrop of the Statue of Liberty and talking about what this country has meant through the centuries, we're going to be standing in front of tanks and under fighter jets and talking about how we're closing our borders.
You know, we had an attorney on our show this week, Steve, who has volunteered from Florida to go to Texas and sort of help some of these people navigate the immigration process as they seek asylum. So she's been to some of these facilities, and she said it is as bad as you would imagine. And then she made the point that you have to imagine then how bad it was. Because I said maybe the idea is that the condition's going to be so bad that word will trickle back. And the people in El Salvador will get the word, hey, they're putting us in cages, don't go. So this bad publicity is actually the administration's way to tell people don't come up. And she said they're still coming.
Yeah.
But what I don't understand about it is during the Obama administration, Syrian refugees was an issue. It became a campaign issue. They were talking about limiting how many...
Governor Mike Pence right. Said no one here.
No one here. But the idea being that they were negotiating how many numbers and this and... Because there was a war. There was a war happening. And if you look at the neighboring countries to Syria, they were admitting people and putting them into what were considered migrant camps and everything like that. I don't understand why this is not classified the same way. If you're having a Central America meltdown where violence is rampant, economic, we see what's happened in Venezuela, then we don't even know who the government is there. Why is that not classified the same? Why is this classified by the Trump administration or by our media as just a bunch of people want to cross the river with their kids on their back and because they want to steal jobs in America? I don't understand why we are not seeing or at least classifying it as the same thing.
Isn't the subtext here, though, a cultural threat? Isn't that what we're talking about?
I think it is, and it's ridiculous we're not talking.
What's the cultural threat?
Well, just that people coming from other countries that don't speak English, it may not be, in case of people from Syria, it may not be Judeo-Christian, that they will come here and they will establish there. And I'm just saying this is what I think the fear is, that they will not learn our language, they will not adopt our traditions, they will not join the melting pot. I think that's what you're talking about. That's what animates a lot of this feeling about immigration. It surprises me when I read that immigration is like the number one issue on people's minds.
Yeah.
When it's not like healthcare or the environment.
I think one of the most mature things or the sound things I heard this week was from the president of El Salvador. And he said, look, this is our fault. He said, that father and daughter, they were fleeing my country. They were running right. from me. This is El Salvador's responsibility. But then he said, please help us address what our problems so that we can make El Salvador better so that the people don't flee.
It just seems to me that whether it be El Salvador, Guatemala, Venezuela, whatever it might be, you just would assume that we would be looking at more news coverage, more government assistance, more almost thinking like it, you know, like we do in we've done this in everywhere around the globe, that the U.S. would be more publicly invested in that so that you don't have a migrant, essentially.
Helping those countries so
helping those countries
don't flee
so
here.
People aren't fleeing. Well, they're fleeing. They're not.
We're doing the opposite of that.
We're doing the opposite. We're acting like this is, you know, this
no,
is.
No, this administration actually has said they're going to pull the aid from those countries if they don't curtail right. the immigration. It's like.
I don't understand it.
I just wish, like you said, Eric, on a human level, we would care for these people more as individual beings. Like, let's just, until we figure it out, take them out of the cages. Find some sort of barracks for them. My understanding is that they exist, but we don't use them. Let's give them more humane treatment. The gap that Joe Biden enjoyed pre-debate is over. Was Who? It his unimpressive performance, or is it the notion put forward by Kamala Harris that he's insensitive to the issue of race?
To hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race in this country. You also worked with them to oppose busing.
Why is he falling, Eric?
Well, I think he's falling because every time he opens his mouth, it seems like he just manages to wander around verbally and, you know, make these little gaffes. And this exchange he had with Kamala Harris the other night at the debate about busing was sort of classic confusion on his part, that he needed to come out and
he acted
and
say, like he didn't see it coming.
Yeah, he needed to have a much better answer for that. And the question is, you know, do you regret being against busing in the 70s? And by busing, she meant court mandated two-way busing where they take kids in black communities and bus them into white communities and white communities into black communities, which was extremely divisive and not particularly productive. It ended up exacerbating white flight and the kind of racial sorting that we have already in this country. And it was a failure. The court-mandated busing was a failure, and the courts put a stop to it. I think Biden should have said, no, I don't regret being opposed to that kind of busing. Voluntary busing, okay. Ways to integrate schools, okay, but not busing. But instead, he did this sort of weird little states' rights argument. It's kind of classic Joe Biden. He doesn't have good answers to these things, and I think his candidacy is going nowhere.
This is what happens when you're in government as long as he has. Issues come up, and he's like, which one was that?
Well,
do you remember that?
Well, you just touched on the issue is that he's old, and the fear is that he's old. And I think ultimately the reason he's falling is because when Kamala jumped in his face on these issues, he wilted.
Right.
And he looked old. He looked befuddled. He practically looked at the moderators to please, dear God, change the subject.
He called time on himself.
My time is up.
You notice that? He said, my time is up, when his time wasn't up. But he was so trying to get out of that moment.
I've also argued very strongly that we, in fact, deal with the notion of denying people access to the ballot box. I agree that everybody, once they, in fact, they should. Anyway, my time's up. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Vice President.
I was just going to say, now put, instead of Kamala Harris, put Donald Trump, who's going to be considerably more brutal and dundering and, you know, and thundering than this. And how's he going to handle that? And if I'm a Democrat, which I'm not, but if I was, I'd look at this guy as my front runner and go, oh, boy.
He dropped 20 points in the CNN poll, right? 20 points, something like that. He didn't drop 20 points because of his position on busing. He dropped 20 points because he looked old.
Yeah,
I only watched 10 minutes of that second debate. When Joe Biden announced he was going to run for president, my thought was, oh, Joe, we love you. Please don't do this.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
And then the polls came out. I'm like, oh, Joe, maybe you can do it. And then watching that debate, it's like he looked old.
Well, what do you mean by, because I don't think he looks too old.
He's got really white teeth.
He's got. I know he's a good-looking old guy. So if he performed
okay, maybe I
better.
Say, maybe I should say he behaved old.
Yeah. Yes.
And he just did. I'm sorry about that. I love him. You know, you've got to. There's always a flavor of the month in these things, yeah. Especially this
early
far
on.
Out.
Yeah. He may be having that Jeb Bush bounce that he had early on.
But I don't know, man.
Before the debates. Before the debates, I was stunned that there weren't the women of the in the primary were not winning. It was Biden. It was
Buttigieg.
It was Sanders. It was like, what? I thought
Sanders
this was the year of the woman. And then after the debate,
too.
Based on the merit of their performances, you are seeing that the women candidates are rising to the top. And I think at the end of the day, I think the Democrat, I think all of the idea that a woman can't win, she can't beat Trump, is bogus. And she it'll be a woman who will represent the Democrats in 2020.
Yeah, I think Kamala really showed herself to be.
Does she want to be the
combative?
Candidate for busing? I mean, this is the.
My column today
is about this. It's like, really? You want to be that? You want to identify the Democratic Party with forced busing?
I think she came across as a tough prosecutor and someone who will be able to go toe to toe with
right.
And she's been all over the place on whether you have to whether you can still have private insurance on top of the Medicare for
right.
All.
She backed off from that, right?
She's gone back and forth on that. I she's got some issues. They all do, obviously, right?
This right.
Is, you're not going to get a perfect person running for president, but I thought she did really well. Her presentation was really opposite of Biden. She was forceful and direct,
but not likable. I mean, that you win the debate doesn't mean you're likable or winnable. That you'll win an election. You and I talked about this, Steve. I thought, okay, she won the debate, but I didn't like her. She was able to bully that issue in. The next morning,
I liked her.
She had buttons and T-shirts with her as a school student being bused, ready to go. That whole thing was a prop. It was just a ploy by her to get that word out, to take Biden
and
down.
It worked really well.
But okay, so like Eric says, okay, so busing is the big issue?
Here's the thing, Eric. Who's the last president who was elected because of his position on the issues? I mean, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing
on because all the issues.
Barack won on hope and change
because the issues don't they're not going to be able to do most of what they want to do when it comes to their issues. I think demeanor matters.
It's a vision. It is a vision, basically, is what candidates are selling.
It's a package. You're doing the package.
Well, I'm interested. Pete Buttigieg keeps climbing up. He was
so good in the debate. I thought he was, to me, I don't know, everybody that saw any of the debate, tell me, who did you most like or want to win after the debate? Bertrand, go.
He's at 4%.
I'll go first.
That means 96% are not with
it. I pick Buttigieg. Who did you like a lot in the debate, Eric?
Oh, boy. Okay. Pass.
I'll go. Big dub. Elizabeth Warren.
Really? I liked her.
Scotty, who do you like after two days of debates?
I liked Harris.
Yeah,
and I like Hickenlooper, but I like.
No, I don't like you. Okay.
I love Buttigieg. You know, I really love, but he's not going to win.
My favorite thing I saw it was the next day when they were at the detention center, and I believe three or four of the candidates crisscrossed there. And it was Buttigieg was on the cameras and Kamala Harris was there and he reached over and he shook her hand and he said, "You did great last night."
Yeah.
And you're hoping, is that shade? It's not shade, it's real.
No.
Like, that's how we do things? This is real.
He's like the Forrest Gump of the presidential campaign.
You're like, I guess we can be nice to each other. Okay.
Think about in the debate when they asked him,
"Your community of South Bend, Indiana has recently been in uproar over an officer involved shooting. The police force in South Bend is now 6% black in a city that is 26% black. Why has that not improved over your two terms as mayor?"
"Because I couldn't get it done.
I have not been able to get it done." And I went, what's the next sentence here? But he completely owned that. I want to vote for him for that, which is perverse.
He's got a lot to answer for, though, in South Bend. There's some serious complaints about the way he handled that whole police issue in South Bend.
I think every city mayor in America will have a version of that issue to answer to.
When it comes to demeanor, John, since you are not a Kamala Harris fan, do you think Elizabeth Warren has a more electable demeanor than Kamala Harris?
I don't think she's especially likable. I don't think she's inspiring. I don't think people go, "Yeah, let's go out for Elizabeth Warren." You feel differently.
I do. I think that I will say, just in my circle of social media and whatever, the only stuff that ever pops from the Democrats is Elizabeth Warren stuff. And I don't know why it is, and I'm not, it's not scientific, it's just anecdotal, meaning the one thing that is being shared by my friends that will be a video she did with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or, and she just seems to be hitting the stuff that, that I think that voters really want to hear about. And that's the corporate greed, that's corruption, that also has a lot to do with just what Donald Trump stands for. So I think that she's been doing great.
I will just note that that same thing was true of Bernie Sanders 4 years ago.
But he got robbed.
Came close.
He didn't come close. They rigged it.
They rigged the primary.
They didn't rig it. They scheduled it in a specific way.
I'm going to change subjects. We're going to Chicago, guys. Nah. Here in Chicago, Cloudgate has been vandalized. Our beloved polished silver bean in Millennium Park was tagged with the gang's name. The paint has since come off, and the police say they caught the seven adults that are suspect in this. 30 years to life. Anybody want to agree?
They're not charged yet. I mean, as we sit, we just talked to the police department.
Is that right?
They haven't been charged.
How come?
They said the charges are, they're still investigating.
Kim Fox says.
I want to just say that. Darn it.
But, you know, I'm
Michelle
happy that
called.
There should be a special jail. For people, three things in Chicago. One, if you deface the bean, you go to special jail. Two, if you spit in anyone's face,
go to special jail.
Go to special jail. And three, if you double park on Ashland.
Are these are your problems.
Huh? Or if you keep your crap out on the street after a snowstorm for more than 48
four
hours.
Four things.
You go to special jail and you're beaten.
How about if you put a tarp down for the 4th of July parade more than 24 hours in advance?
Or use gloves and 16 in softball. This is
your topic.
Jail.
Okay.
Special We've jail. Just programmed your talk show, John, for
a bigger crime. A bigger crime. The one that people seem to be cool with in Chicago is election rigging. In civil court, House Speaker Mike Madigan is being sued for running dummy candidates against himself. The idea is facing a credible Hispanic challenger, and he was in 2016. Two other candidates with Hispanic names would spread the anti-Madigan or pro-minority vote more thinly. So this Jason Gonzalez guy who lost to the speaker is asking a court in Chicago for $2 million, and I hope he gets it. I hope he gets it. It's so...
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Awful.
I love
when John discovers something like this issue.
I know.
That has been, it's like, did you
going
hear that?
Forever.
Did you hear they reversed the Chicago River? I mean,
right. You know what? It's so blatant in 2019 for this to be happening. It's so blatant.
And a guy who can't lose the election, but he still cheats to make sure he wins the election.
Well, he did that with his people, did that with the DePaul student. What was his name?
Kid, too.
And they were
absolutely
playing fast and loose with his petitions. If anything is ever going to bring down Madigan, he's going to get caught lying in a deposition about this stuff. That's the only. I mean, he doesn't have cell phones or computers. I'm not sure.
He doesn't. He's very off the grid.
And then someone got him for Christmas. He's like, let me try this thing out.
But in answer to your basic question is this is legal. You can run. There's no threshold standard for being a candidate. You don't have to do anything to be a candidate.
Right.
It is completely sleazy, but it seems to be legal. I don't know what the judge is going to say in this case because you can say like,
court.
It's a federal civil suit, right?
Yes.
The judge may just say, well, you know, this sucks, but it's not the law does not.
His attorney's Tony Parayka, and he's wound up about this. It's a very, I'm rooting for Tony on this.
Tony was my favorite politician because when he lost to Todd Stroger, he demanded, he rioted. Remember,
he
marched from the
was it a one
Board of
riot?
Elections with his, no way! what a great thing to do on election night.
Now, isn't the one thing to watch here is that these guys were, they took testimony under oath. What could be the right angle here is that Madigan or one of the others lied under oath, and that's where the danger for them politically and legally lies.
This is our first podcast since the 1st of July, so there's a whole bunch of new laws and taxes in place. Gas tax doubled, real estate transfer fees, cigarettes, e-cigarettes, all getting more expensive. And Eric, you said you don't think that the law on texting and driving is right. If you are holding your phone, even if you're not using it, but just holding it, right? So therefore, you're not hands-free. You're holding your phone. You say, but I'm not using it. I'm not texting. I'm not talking. I'm just holding it. You will still be breaking the law.
You could be eating a sandwich in your car, right? And it's okay. No, I think that, texting and emailing and pump punching up podcasts in your car when it's moving, bad idea. Have I ever done it? Maybe. But at a stoplight, the law, this is the thing I objected to. Issue. I sent you a note on, John. It's like, at a stop, when you're at a stoplight, that's when you're, you know, your car's stopped. You can then look down at your phone and go, okay.
Really?
Yeah.
No, hold on. Whole new conversation. At a stoplight, you think it's wise?
Yeah.
That's a good time
wise,
to check your phone?
Yeah,
I think it's responsible. I think it's the responsible.
You're looking at your phone and the lights turn green and there's 22 car lengths ahead of you, but you're texting Tim about something. Assuming
that's
somebody
a nuisance,
named Tim.
I don't think it's as much of a danger. What I would say.
A little tap on the horn. And we're going to make a law about that? I think it's fine. I think it's safe. I think it's fine to look at your phone when you're at a stoplight.
We're going the opposite direction now. So instead of cracking down, you're going to broaden the legal use of texting while driving if you're at a stoplight.
If you're stopped at a stoplight.
If your car
But your foot's
stopped.
On the brake. You're not in park. Right? Just to be clear, your foot's on the brake. You're at a stoplight.
If you can point me to one traffic accident that was caused by someone looking at their phone at a stoplight.
Somebody rear-ended them because the light ahead of them was green.
And they were on their phone.
And they were on their phone, and they didn't look up because it's okay in Eric's world to text while you're at a light.
If you rear-end somebody, you're at fault.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Fine, thank you.
So you have every right not to move for any reason.
I'm going
to
put that on the radio.
Yes,
and
this
we'll
is your news. I got a news click for you
right
there.
You are going to get excoriated. I'm going to get excoriated representing your views. That's what's going to happen. Thanks a lot, Eric. The cows are coming home. There were 340 of them 20 years ago in the city on sort of an artistic parade. People decorated them. They auctioned them off. They made $3.5 million. Some of it went to good causes, students and things like that. 20 of them are going to gather again over by Water Tower and Water Tower Place. And Eric, you don't like that idea either.
I don't
what
like it.
What the hell's the matter
like
with
it.
You?
I would like there to
Why?
Be a new
Who heard
animal,
something
Eric.
New.
Like,
yeah.
Something new. This is old. This is 20 years ago.
They tried other new stuff, and it wasn't as good.
They did ping pong tables.
Yeah, but it's not like this is going to be any good. Like, in fact, you're going to walk out in front of Water Tower and see the old cows and
I'd
be like,
to see, I think
oh,
they should
finally,
do,
the cows are back.
If they, I thought they should do 340 new cows
yeah,
all around the city. I would be. Or I got a better idea.
Horses.
Wait, you want to hear my new better ideas?
Sure.
Pigs. Sue's.
What?
The Tyrannosaurus.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Dinosaurs.
Yeah, make hundreds of Sue the Tyrannosaurus
Rexes. I would love to paint one of those. That'd be great.
And then have them around the city. Arr, that would be a lot of fun. People would go for that.
In New York City, and I forgot this anecdotal, but David Lynch did one when they did the cows, and it was so strange that they took it off the wherever it was supposed to be. And then it got auctioned at a later date for millions because it was such a strange thing. But see, that's my... At the end of the day, I'm like, yeah, but these are acceptable cows. Like, artists... these are the acceptable
that's
ones.
The art
but
critic
the cool ones, the
view.
Ones that are a little bit avant-garde, were like, that has no place on Michigan Avenue.
The city did do ping pong tables.
Yeah.
And that didn't go well.
And the Millie.
Because it's a windy city.
Millie.
And so
I got that. I'll give you
Wait,
the...
What?
I have the CD on that.
The city spread like the cows. Ping pong tables in public spaces all around town with ping pong battles and ping pong balls, and somehow people didn't steal them or vandalize them, so you could just pick up a ping pong game with people. It really didn't work. People didn't recreationally play, and it was too windy to play a lot of times.
Here's my idea. My idea for a new installation would be Ventra cards, fully loaded.
And
you can use them anywhere. Yeah. You're like, oh, this is great. And you just, it's tethered to the bus stop, and then you can use it, and it's got a nice art on it, and then boom.
That's like free health care for all. You're just a socialist is what you are. That is Justin Kaufman. Yep. Thanks for coming in, Justin. Steve Bertrand.
Thank you, buddy.
Eric Zorn, Scott Stantis, we're out of time, boys. We share this studio with Bertrand's
show. This is where you complain.
And it's a shame that we don't have more time.
We've been talking for 50 minutes now.
Thanks, L.F. Garris. I'm John Williams.
Less is more. You ever heard of that? Are you a journalist?
We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.